Hey, welcome to Quick Bites. I'm Pauline Altman. This is both episode 77 and my first solo episode, which is definitely weird, but I think I'm going to get used to it pretty quickly. My best anythings this week are just that Euphoria is back for season 2, and then Legends of Tomorrow and Batwoman are back from their winter hiatus. I'm sure I will bring them up again. My topic today is the Teapot Dome scandal, which I found out about because of Greystone Mansion in Los Angeles. Greystone is a mansion, it's at the edge of the Hollywood Hills, just outside this like super fancy neighborhood called like Trousdale Estates. It overlooks the city, like the Hollywood side and downtown. You can see from like one of the patios outside this mansion, you can see from like all the way on your left, you can see downtown LA, all the way across to like Santa Monica and the ocean all the way on the right. They've used it a lot for exteriors on shows and stuff. You can walk around the gardens and they have events out there, and you can have like weddings and things inside the actual mansion. While doing some light reading on it, I saw there was a related political scandal, and I knew that that needed to be a topic. We will circle back to the mansion at the end. The Teapot Dome scandal was the biggest high-level political scandal before Watergate. It was also the first time a cabinet member went to jail. Some of my sources were very specific and were like, it was the first time a cabinet member went to jail for committing a felony while in office. I think it was just the first time a cabinet member went to jail at all. A few things to know about the time before we get into the scandal. First, the president, Warren G. Harding, was elected in 1920. He was formerly an Ohio senator, and one of the people who wanted to take that seat in the Ohio Senate was Colonel William Cooper Proctor, the head of Procter & Gamble. I love any time a name that's like just a company name now comes up in my research and it's like, oh yeah, that was some guy. Harding was kind of a long shot for president, but there also wasn't much of a front runner at the Republican convention, and party leaders thought Harding had an advantage over the Democratic candidate. Leading up to the general election, he made some big promises to the oil tycoons of the time that his cabinet would be oil industry friendly. The oil tycoons, of course, liked that idea and threw a bunch of support, aka money, behind Harding's campaign. He was also supported by old guard Republicans because he promised normalcy a lot. One of the issues at the time was also how much effort to put into conservation versus letting industries grow. Harding was pretty much on the industry side. Harding ended up winning by a landslide. The problem with Harding that is relevant to this topic is that he hired a lot of friends for his cabinet, and his friends were really into breaking the rules. There was a group of politicians and business leaders, most of whom Harding knew from Ohio politics, who were called the Ohio Gang. Several of them ended up in scandals. A side note, Herbert Hoover was Secretary of Commerce. He didn't like the Ohio Gang and or the stuff that they got up to. And Calvin Coolidge was Harding's VP. When Coolidge took over after Harding's death, he worked to clear out a lot of the Ohio Gang out of politics. The first player in the scandal is Albert Fall, a friend of Harding's from New Mexico, who was also friends with some oil tycoons. Harding made Albert Fall the Secretary of the Interior, who oversees federal land, animals, resources, etc. Next up are the oil tycoons themselves, Harry Sinclair from Mammoth Oil Company and Ed Doheny from Pan American Petroleum Company. Finally is the Navy's oil reserves. The Navy started converting their ships from coal to oil-powered in 1909. By the time Harding was president, Congress had some federal land set aside that they knew had oil in it that the Navy could use in an emergency. One site in Wyoming and two in California. So the scandal. Secretary of the Interior and friend of the oil industry, Albert Fall, has a great idea. He convinces President Harding to transfer control of the Navy's oil reserves over to the Interior Department for safekeeping. The reserves are Teapot Dome in Wyoming and Elk Hills and Buena Vista Hills in California. In 1922, Albert Fall, through the Department of the Interior, takes control of all three sites. If the oil wasn't needed, the proper procedure, I'm guessing, would be for the federal government to take bids from companies for a land lease that would let them drill for that oil. Everybody gets a fair chance. The government gets the best deal. Instead, Albert Fall turns around and whispers to his oil friends, Harry Sinclair and Ed Doheny, "Do you want in on these drilling sites?" They, of course, said yes, and Fall leased the oil-rich land to Mammoth Oil Company and Pan American Petroleum Company, respectively. He even gave them a friends and family discount on their land leases. It's because his friends were going to give him some of that money, too. The total amount of oil estimated to be in those three sites was worth hundreds of millions of dollars in 1920s money. No other companies got the chance to bid on those leases, and the Navy had no say in losing their emergency reserves. The companies did agree to build, I say agree, it was basically like, you have to do this also to make up for this. They agreed to build oil storage at the naval base in Pearl Harbor and build a pipeline from Wyoming to Kansas. One of the problems Fall and his friends encountered is the locals at Teapot Dome. They knew the site belonged to the Navy, and one day they see Sinclair trucks taking in drilling equipment. Word got to the Wall Street Journal, who ran an article in April of 1922 about this deal between Sinclair and the government. The next day, Senator from Wyoming, John Kendrick, started the process in the Senate to open an investigation. A quote from Senate.gov. Wisconsin Republican Senator Robert La Follette arranged for the Senate Committee on Public Lands to investigate the matter. His suspicions deepened after someone ransacked his quarters in the Senate office building. End of quote. Another point of suspicion. So Albert Fall was really good at covering his tracks in like the planning of getting these leases set up. What he wasn't as good at was hiding the money that he was getting as kickbacks. A point of suspicion in the investigation was that Albert Fall was getting richer faster than made sense. The investigation was sort of taken over by a junior senator. It carried on somewhat in the background for over a year. During that time, in August 1923, and after a cruise to the Alaska Territory, President Harding died of, I think officially, a heart attack. It was a stroke or a heart attack. Harding had approved Albert Fall's leases of the federal drilling sites. He may have also seen some nice kickbacks from the oilmen. There was a newspaper he owned that someone bought out for way too much money that was suspected to be a deal set up by Sinclair. And he had plans for when he left office to sail around the world with a bunch of friends on Sinclair's yacht. And the source of that was like Harding and his wife were telling people that that was their plans for when he was out of office. When Calvin Coolidge took over as president, he appointed new special prosecutors to look into Albert Fall's drilling leases. At some point, Albert Fall leaves his job as Interior Secretary. He starts up a large ranch in New Mexico, and sometimes helps set up deals like international oil deals for Sinclair and Doheny. Oilman Doheny admitted to the Senate during their investigation that he loaned Fall the money to buy that ranch through the very normal process of sending his son Ned over with $100,000 in cash, which is around $1.3 million today. Prosecutors also uncovered that Sinclair provided the ranch with a herd of livestock, which may be just a friendly gesture to welcome his buddy to the ranch gang, but he also gave Fall's son-in-law around $300,000, which is around $4 million today. Fall did testify to the Senate. When asked why he didn't tell anyone about the drilling leases, he said it was to protect the sites of valuable national resources and prevent other oil men from trying to drill there. They didn't really like that answer. Fall was convicted in late 1929 of accepting a bribe. So the deals themselves were never illegal, even if people frowned on them when they found out. It was the paying and accepting of bribes that made it a problem. He was fined $100,000 and given 1 year in prison. $100,000 is the amount of the, like, quote-unquote loan from Doheny, and accepting that specific bribe is what he was convicted of. Eventually, the fine was forgiven because Fall ran out of all the money that he got through kickbacks, and Doheny foreclosed on the ranch. He also had his sentence shortened because of his failing health. So he, in the end, they sort of walked back some of the punishment only because, like, life was punishing him on its own. There was another player in this at some point, Colonel James G. Darden. Darden claimed that he was first in line to drill at Teapot Dome and should have gotten the contract over Sinclair. He even went to the site to try and set up a drilling operation. Albert Fall got President Harding to send Marines to gently dissuade Darden, and then Sinclair had to pay off the Denver Post when they found out about it. History.com says that the Denver Post did report the story, but they blackmailed Sinclair over additional coverage that made him look not great. He paid them and another oilman who lost out on the drilling deal around $1 million. Sinclair did see some legal consequences. He tried to get out of answering some of the Senate's questions and called it a privacy issue. The Supreme Court disagreed. He eventually was sentenced to 6 months in prison for contempt of Congress and jury tampering. Doheny was acquitted of paying the bribe because he and Fall stuck with their story that it was just a loan. Even though the leases themselves were not illegal, the Supreme Court ended up voiding them in 1927. Now it's time to circle back to Greystone Mansion. Doheny's son, Ned, was in his late 20s when he took his father's bribe money to Albert Fall. He was accompanied on that trip by his friend slash secretary slash chauffeur, per many sources who could not, even within some sources, they changed up their relationship title. But his friend Hugh Plunkett went along with him. Doheny at the time was the richest man in Los Angeles. When Ned got married, Edward's wedding gift to him was 12.58 acres of land overlooking Los Angeles. It took 3 years and over $3 million to build the mansion, which is called Greystone because they used a lot of Greystone in the construction. It has 55 rooms and originally had, which is, this is a quote from greystonemansion.org, stables, kennels, tennis courts, a fire station, a gatehouse, a swimming pool, and a greenhouse. End of quote. Ed Doheny is, per the LA Times, one of the players that helped really grow Los Angeles at the beginning because he discovered oil, I think, near the La Brea tar pits. He was also one of the richest men in the world. Fall of 1928, Ned, his wife, and their five children move into Greystone. In spring of 1929, Hugh Plunkett gets called to testify in the Teapot Dome investigation. Hugh Plunkett, who helped carry bribe money of all cash in just like a black bag to Albert Fall in exchange for this great deal that his friend slash employer's father got. Before he had the chance to testify, Ned and Hugh Plunkett are found dead in Greystone Mansion, each with a bullet wound to the head. It's ruled a murder-suicide. There's actually a lot of controversy over what actually happened in that case. The Doheny family stifled the investigation for some reason. I read it in the LA Times, but I think the LA Public Library did a whole like write-up about some of the different theories about what actually happened or what could have actually happened, because the LA Times said if you go back and look at coverage from the time, the story blew up when they were first found, but pretty quickly there was just like an official story that was put out that the family backed, and then it just sort of went away. If you're a true crime person, definitely look into it. The official story at the time was that Plunkett got scared of testifying in the Senate investigation, went mad, and committed the crime. Like, they specifically said, oh, he just lost his mind and killed his friend. The investigations in the Senate led to legislation that gave and still gives Congress the power to subpoena the tax records of any U.S. citizen. My sources were history.com, greystonemansion.org, the Department of the Interior, which is DOI.gov, Senate.gov, the LA Times, and Wikipedia. I picked this topic because I thought it was super interesting. One, that the investigation itself ended up being the prosecutors basically waiting for Albert Fall to make a mistake with his cover-ups. Like, the deal part that he set up went super smoothly. I also picked it because I think that situation is still the case today. Albert Fall setting up the deal by just turning to his friends and saying, hey, do you want this? What was illegal ended up being that he personally benefited from that deal that he made. And I think that's still the case now, where if like you help, if you're in the government and you help out a friend or give them a job or something, that's totally fine, that they do it all the time. But as soon as you get some kind of benefit from that outside of helping your friend out, that's when it becomes a problem. I also thought it was interesting that everyone involved did eventually see consequences, just at different levels. Doheny did get out of legal consequences, but the conclusion of the investigation happened just 6 months after his son was killed. So it's not like he was celebrating. The initial deal and the initial, like at least the initial bribe from Doheny happened in 1922. And there wasn't a conclusion to the investigation until the end of 1929. So there were several years where there are prosecutors in the Senate who were like trying to track down proof that Albert Fall took bribes. And as the story came out about all these things that went down, it made it like this huge scandal in the country. If you have a topic that you want me to look into, or if you want to bring a topic to the podcast and teach it to me, you can find me on Twitter at QuickBitesPod, on Instagram at QuickBitesPod. You can send me an email at QuickBitesPod@gmail.com. And I guess I did the damn thing. Bye.